This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball game is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Sauce after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
If you haven't had a chance to listen to Eric Musselman's or watch Eric Musselman's press conference from last night recapping the game, head over to hitthatline.com because it's really interesting, and you can see the differences that he has in attitude and in mood, if you will, when he wins and loses, which is expected. I mean, he's a coach. He's a competitor. It's what he wants to be. But, you know, people kept thinking about that last play, though, and how it was kind of all out of sorts a little bit, and it seemed like when people were watching it, they're like, hey, what in the world was that? What were they trying to do there? Well, they tried to run a play. It had good defense there by South Carolina, but that wasn't the reason why. There was no reason to focus on that. In fact, Tommy Eric Musselman, as we have a clip here, was a little frustrated at the questions and said, listen, it's not the reason we lost the game. Take a listen.
Said Hannibal did a real good job of denying him the ball. Do you just kind of give Carolina credit for their defense there at the end?
Yeah, I don't know why we keep talking about one last play. Like, yeah, they did a great job with 7 seconds on the clock when we have a baseline out of bounds. They did a great job of denying Mason. Having said that, we just played a team that led for 37 minutes and 43 seconds. We should also talk, you guys, a little bit about what happened. Why did we not have any rhythm to start the game? Why did we not get any shots up on the we couldn't even get field goals attempted early in the game? To me, that was more than anything.
I mean, he was not happy about the question that was asked there. But he was not happy about having emphasis put on it, because, like he said, there wasn't anything about that final play that was the reason why, and the people kept asking about him. But what it was is he just laid it out there. Couldn't find the rhythm. Couldn't get over that big start. They were going up against a team that was doing a really good job of being physical with them. I mean, that was the reason they lost.
Mason Jones scored Arkansas's first points of the game on a fast break coming off a turnover on a bad pass by South Carolina, by Lawson. That was Arkansas's first points with 15:20 to go in the first half. I mean, that's as big, maybe the biggest reason you lost the game. You spent an eighth of the game doing nothing offensively. You know, the first 5 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes of the game, you know, first 4 minutes of that game, where are you at? And talking about settling for bad looks. And once again, this team, I think this is the struggle. What I hear there, John, is him talking about this is the struggle he's fighting. This is a team with players that want to shoot a bunch of threes, and he's trying to get them to drive it to the rim more and try to draw fouls, try to get to the free throw line, and then make your free throws. He's frustrated about settling for threes and missing free throws. That's what I heard last night.
Yeah. No, that's what I heard, too, because, listen, Tommy, there's a reason why, in so many cases in basketball, when you hear the term settling for threes, settling for jumpers. What does settling mean? Settling means is that there may have been a plan in place, there may have been some other way to do it, some better way to do it, but you just felt more comfortable doing it this way instead. It's maybe a little easier to do. It's when you settle for those threes that becomes a problem. There's no problem in taking threes. Eric Musselman has said many times, they want to emphasize the three ball. That's what is big in college basketball right now. But it's a matter of, as long as you're getting good looks, taking good threes, not dribbling around and then just taking a contested three because, you know, it was a little easier than going and driving into the lane. You know, it's you can't settle for those threes in those situations, because as soon as you start doing that, and it's kind of almost like it's contagious, where then when the defense sees that, hey, this guy's going to settle for it, they're going to face up on you. They're going to know that if they can really play some good defense against you, you're going to settle for that three as well. It's very lazy, especially when you have a game plan together of saying, this is what we need you to do. We need you to drive more. You need to get to the rim. Listen, you guys are good, especially Mason Jones. You're good at free throw shooting. Isaiah Joe, you're a great free throw shooter. Get to the rim and get something going. Get these bigs in foul trouble, and because as soon as we can do that, then they're really going to be in trouble. Then we can really open it up a little bit. There's a game plan in place for a reason, and settling for threes, I guarantee you, was not in that game plan.
No, and he spoke about that. He wanted to create the angles. You knew going into this game, we probably, you know, could have spent more time on this yesterday in the day or two leading up to the game. South Carolina's a team that fouls a lot. They're a physical team. Last night's game was a physical, handsy game. That's why you had 57 fouls in the game. They could have called more. I mean, it was just a physical, ugly, in-the-mud kind of game last night. You had to know that getting to the free throw line was going, you know, settling for threes is what you didn't need to do. Driving to the rim, getting the contact, hoping, as he spoke last time, off the bounce, trying to be really good. And he said, we've got a limited number of guys on this roster that can do that. He was very clear about that. The biggest difference, though, in the game, I thought, was Arkansas didn't bring their game at the free throw line. Mm-hmm. 65% last night, left 14 points. I know you're not going to make them all, but in a 79-77 ball game, you know, you can talk about refs, you can talk about that last possession. I almost call it two because they started a play out, couldn't get anywhere, then called timeout again with, 7.5 seconds to go. It's almost like they, you know, had to have a mulligan there. They were fortunate to get it, and they just couldn't get an open look. You knew you were playing a good, tough defensive team that was going to be nose-to-nose with you last night. It didn't need to come down to one last possession because South Carolina's, I don't say a mirror image of Arkansas defensively, but they have a lot of the same tendencies.
Well, yeah, because when you're going up against a physical team, especially a very physical defense, then you don't counter that by being passive. Since they're aggressive, we don't want to be aggressive anymore. No, that's not how you counter that. What you do is that you know that they're going to be aggressive. They're going to take a lot more risk, so you force them into taking those risks, which can also always almost lead them into foul trouble. By driving. It's a very simple thing. It's a very simple concept. And that's, I think, where the frustrations of Eric Musselman comes into play. Because he's like, listen, we know what the recipe was for this. We talked about it. And I'm sure that in their practices leading up to this, they're like, guys, this team is very aggressive. This team will foul us a lot. This team is going to take a lot more risk when we're driving the ball. So let's go after them. Let's really focus on that. And his guys didn't. Against a physical team, you do not need to shoot 26 threes. Nope. You need to drive it in more. You need to get to that free throw line. Get those guys in foul trouble because that changes the whole dynamic of the game. Because, Tommy, they weren't even driving as much.
Nope.
And they still got South Carolina to foul 33 times. Mm-hmm. That's what's crazy.
But you got to make free throws. You know,
yeah.
You know, I didn't see one complaint last night about Arkansas shooting. Hey, this wasn't fair to South Carolina. Arkansas shot more free throws than them. You know, Arkansas had a chance to win the game just on free throw disparity last night.
Yeah.
Didn't do it.
But, Tommy, that's you can't say those things. It's because the officiating and because of fouling and because of everything else. But, yeah, I think the free throw shooting, man, thank goodness for Mason Jones again. He was 15 of 16.
I mean, South Carolina was called for 33 fouls in the ball game to Arkansas's 24. I mean, I understand all the complaints because it was an ugly game to watch. Let me assure you, it was an ugly game to officiate. They called 57, could have called 77 last night. You know, but this was a game where Arkansas had 9 fewer fouls and shot 7 more free throws.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, you know, if this was the other way around on the road, you were playing at South Carolina, had these stats, they'd be melting the phone lines down right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, too, Tommy, and this is something that I think, I'm not sure if we gave the stat out, but 40 of those fouls were called in the second half alone. You averaged a foul every 30 seconds.
I think if you look at a lot of games, there's generally more fouls in the second half because players know how many they have to give.
Well, right.
Most games get more physical because as you get to the deadline, which is the final horn, players try to make more plays. So I think, but you're right. There were 17 in the first half. What'd you say, 40 in the second half?
Yeah.
I mean, trust me, it wasn't fun to watch.
I know.
I guarantee you, for those three guys out there, it wasn't fun to referee either. They had to make a lot of decisions. The style of play dictated them having to make a lot of decisions. And it got into a rhythm where there was a decision that led to a foul on every half-court possession. That's what it felt like. That's what I was seeing watching. Because of the way both teams were driving the ball at times, there was just decisions to make. And I thought it was handsy defense by both teams last night. It was just a physical ball game.
It's a physical ball game.
And the idea of, you know, we'll let them play. We'll just don't call that. Well, that is not what the rules committee has instructed the officiating committee to do. And everyone has accountability, including these officials. And the NCAA training videos, their supervisors, all of them are instructing game officials to reduce physicality in the game. Mm-hmm. We've got to understand that as fans and media observers, that the reduction of physicality is something that is happening, and when you have a physical game, it's going to lead to 57 fouls. That's why it was the way it was last night. Physical game, a lot of physicality. It's a mandate. It's not a suggestion. It's a mandate from the NCAA Rules Committee to reduce physicality in the game now.
Yeah. I mean, you've explained it to me many times. I get it.
Freedom of movement. They want more offense. You can't have more points and more offense when you got physical defense that's not legal. I'm not making excuses for last night or this. I'm just telling you what the state of the game. This didn't have anything to do with last night. The reduction of physicality is the first thing, generally, talked about in all 11 NCAA training videos that have went out to all the coaches and officials around the country. They come out on about every 10-day basis. Mm-hmm. Video 11 hit yesterday. So, I mean, that's just the way this game is moving. So the style of play you saw last night is going to lead to the kind of game that none of us enjoyed watching. Yeah. Which is a lot of fouls because the game dictated that.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I go to your expertise on it because, I'm not saying that you know everything.
If I did, I would be working that level of games.
True. But I'm just saying that, you know, I'm not going to be the type of person that reads the rule book or pays attention to the referee rules because, honestly, Tommy, I don't care. Like, just to be honest about it, I don't care about it enough. And even if I did, to watch videos on what's the right call or not.
Well, that's not the fan's job. But that is the people that are being paid, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to work these and officiate these games.
Yeah.
I can promise you there's accountability to get it right. And I'm just telling you, whether it's a Southeastern Conference, the Big 12, the Big 10, the Pac-12, whatever, the game of college basketball has changed, and we have to understand as fans and observers that the advantage disadvantage days or no blood no foul or whatever you grew up on is out. And a game like last night was played kind of old school, but that's not the way that's not the way the game is being officiated anymore. And it's not because the officials make decisions; it's because the rules committee dictates the way the game is going to be called now. The rules committee, who's on that? Well, it's filled with coaches and administrators. Not many officials on the rules committee. So it's like speeding limits. You know, the state trooper don't decide if it's 55 or 65 out here. Someone on the higher pay grade decides that. It's just his job to enforce it.
Mm-hmm. No, hey, I hear you. Let's go to the phone lines. And David is in South Arkansas. What's going on, David?
Good morning, gentlemen. I was watching that, whatever it was, last night. And one of the problems I have is the incredible inconsistency with officials calling the game. There was a South Carolina guy who was barely touched on his hand or arm. Blant, the refs call a foul. Meanwhile, if there's a loose ball, you got five players diving on the sucker like it's a fumble in football. And no foul call, players rolling around. I always thought that was traveling. I figured if you dive on somebody, there's got to be a foul in there somewhere. And it's just the inconsistency of it. People banging around inside. Well, no foul on that. But I will say this about free throws. When we're only 27 out of 40, that is the serious problem right there. I mean, we did okay rebounding. Way too many three-pointers like you guys were talking about. And I know I was listening to y'all talking about the officiating. To me, it's just incredible inconsistency. Well, they'll call this little bitty hand check, but somebody goes in, bang, it's not even blocking, not charging, bodies go down. You know, what the heck is that? But anyway, thanks, guys. Good discussion.
Yeah. If anything, I thought last night they were very consistent. You may not have liked it, but, I mean, if you're going to read the however many hundreds of mentions I got people firing away at me on Twitter last night. The one thing people were saying is they thought they were consistent. Well, they're consistently bad, but they're consistent, you know. I thought they called similar levels of contact and illegal contact on both ends.
I mean, yeah, I thought they were fairly consistent.
I mean, I get your complaint, David, but I didn't think last night that fit that game. Because Hell, there was a whistle on every end in the second half, like we're talking about. Every 30 seconds, there's a whistle. Hard to be inconsistent that way.
Yeah. No, I mean,
at least my definition of consistency. So I had no issue with consistency. Again, I just thought it was a physically played ball game with a lot of hands and not enough feet on defense.
Yeah. The only issues that I took, just thinking of a few of them, Tommy, is just like, and again, maybe you can speak more on it if you know what specific plays I'm talking about, but there was a play where Jalen Harris looked like he got hip-checked into the scores table.
Yep.
And no foul was called. They said it was out of bounds.
Transition play, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was like something like that where I'm like, man, you get the little hand checks, but yet when it looks like a dude just gets body blocked into something, nothing gets called. I think that's maybe what he was referring to.
I saw the same thing you saw. I'd like to have a different angle. I'd like to see, did he step out before that happened? I don't know. The overhead looking at the view, the main view you see on TV, left to right, right to left, you couldn't see that. I don't know which occurred first. I don't know. I know it was a transition play, and it happened right there, you know, just short of half court. I remember that play well in the game last night because that was my first thought. Was there not contact on that play? Mm-hmm. He was called out of bounds. My question would be, and I don't know the answer because we never saw a replay that gave us a different angle, was there a step or a foot put out of bounds prior to any of that contact? I don't know. But I know it presented the same. You're exactly right. That's the way it appeared on TV. But I don't know that we had all the angles and the looks that you need to know what you need to know on that play.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Let's go back to the phone lines. JT is in Hot Springs. What's going on, JT?
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Tommy, I have a problem with this right here. I'm not blaming the officials for last night because that was not the officials' fault that Arkansas lost. Mm-hmm. I don't like seeing, and this is what I tweeted to you last night about, the ball literally hit the rim and was in Mason Jones' hands for a defensive rebound, and the whistle is blown, foul on Desi Fields. That's what I don't like. And you said, well, the whole play, you have to look at all. The shot didn't matter whether or not it went in. If it was a foul on the shot, the referee should have blown the whistle right then. That's what I don't like. And about the game, 40,000 in the second half and 17 in the first half, I see it more as the officials let them play in the first half and didn't get all the physicality under control in the first half. So then in the second half, it was, now we're going to call everything to make sure you guys stop being so physical. And you made a comment, and Matty T put it in a clip for a couple weeks now. The call at 18-12 in the first half is not as important as the call with 2 minutes left. No, they're both the same. And as a player, and I remember this playing, I remember playing this way. I've talked to players who played Division I, who played in the NBA. We want consistency through the whole game. So if you tell me the first three or four possessions I'm playing defense, and you let me get away with a little bit more, and then a hand check, and then you call a foul on me. Okay, I know where the line is now. Call it that way the rest of the game. It's fine. Don't get to the five-minute mark left to go in the game and start calling that a foul that you haven't called for the last 30 minutes of the game. That's where my problem lies with the officiating. No. And I don't like seeing that because, several times in the first half was not a foul, got called in the second half. And that's where the players are looking with this look on their face of, why is that a foul now? And I understand what they're saying because you let me get away with it for 35 minutes and now you're calling it.
No, I get your point there. Now, my point a week or two ago on what you're hearing in the promo is what happens in the, and whether it's a play, whether it's a call, whether it's, as I also referenced, whether it's Chuck Barrett's play-by-play call, anything that happens in the last 4 minutes of a ball game just has more bearing on the outcome because there's not enough possessions to overcome a mistake by a player, a coach, a referee. If Eric Musselman sends him out of a TV timeout, out of a media timeout with the wrong play and the outcome of the play is you don't score and the other team gets the ball, you have a turnover or whatever. That's far less has far less bearing on the game than if it occurred last night with 7.5 seconds to go. That's just the reality and the nature of the game because you're reaching the deadline. That was my point a couple of weeks ago is what happens in those last minutes of the game because there's fewer possessions has more meaning. That's what I was saying.
Okay, got you on that. I understand that.
Because you're a player, you yes. played. If you miss yes. a shot with 18-12 yes. to go in the first half, that's not good, but that's not nearly as important as you missing a shot with 18 seconds to go in the game, right?
That is true.
And that's the point I'm making.
That's where I was confused on what you said because I was talking to some friends, and we're like, No. That call is just the same.
No. What I'm saying is, as an official, as a play-by-play man, as a coach, as a player, you want to be perfect in those last 4 minutes of the game because there's not enough possessions to overcome it. If you make a bad mistake, regardless of your role, there's not enough time to make up for that mistake.
No, I agree.
That was my whole point.
I learned as like seventh grade, my dad got mad at me because I said the ref blew a call late in the game, and he looked at me and said, "Son, y'all went 14 of 30 from the free throw line. Don't talk about a bad call with 30 seconds left, you know."
And Arkansas didn't score for the first 440 of the game last night.
Exactly. So I'm not blaming the officials. That was just my problem is the inconsistencies that I see when it's like you let it go the first half, and then the second half, now we're going to start calling everything, and you have players looking around going, why are you calling a foul on me?
Sometimes
that's
the game,
I have a problem with.
And I think the game changed a little bit. I thought it got more physical in the second half because I thought Arkansas, and here's why, Arkansas started driving to the – would you agree Arkansas drove to the rim more in the second half?
Oh, yes, they did, and they needed
to. So what's going to happen when that happens?
Oh, there's going to be contact, absolutely.
And that's why there was more fouls, you know.
But what I'm saying is in the first half, there were some drives that weren't called.
But so my question, David, was there more drives to the rim in the second half?
No, there weren't more in the second half.
That's the reason. This game just was, as John said, it was gross to watch. It was just, there was no flow to the game. It was not a fun game because there was no flow to it.
And I think players sometimes would rather just, you know, don't call some of those fouls. Even though it may be contact, don't call it. You know, just let us play. We can get a flow going. That's what a lot of players want anyway. You know, they want to be up and down the court. They don't want to be shooting free throws every possession.
Yeah. Arkansas took 16 of their 26 three-pointers in the first half. They only shot it 10 times from, you know, so what do you think they were doing with the ball the rest of the time?
Oh, yeah. That's how most of them got on their butts and chewed them out.
Exactly.
Take it to the rim.
So sometimes the way it changes because the game, that's my point, the game changed and the way Arkansas attacked the rim changed in the second half.
I agree with you on that. My only problem is just call the fouls the same throughout the game. And that's why I didn't see the same level of consistency with the officiating of what was a foul, what's not a foul. That's what I didn't like. And like John said about the hip check on Jalen Harris, there's several times like that. It's like, wait a minute, that should have been a foul. Yeah. But you don't see, like you said, and I don't understand officiating sometimes of the trail official saying he saw it go out of bounds on somebody. I'm like, you were out of position. How did you see that? Yeah. You know, that's something I don't know why they can't go to the monitor on that. If one official says, I didn't see it, and the trail official can make that call.
Do you want him to go to the monitor more? Nobody wants more monitor reviews. We got to run. Sorry, the music's running here. But, John, nobody wants to go to the monitor more, do they?
Well, yeah. When you want that game to last until 11:30 midnight last night? That would have been
fun.
Thanks
for the call, David. That was fun back and forth. But
listen, JT, actually.
JT, I'm sorry. JT, nobody wants more. We've had a lot of calls. Nobody wants more monitor reviews. Nobody.
No, they don't. Just remember, folks.
Talk about bad flow. Add a few more monitor reviews. That's the one thing the game didn't have last night is a bunch of those.
Yeah, I'd rather punch myself in the face repeatedly than watch a game like that. And as bad as last night's game was, second hour of the Morning Rush coming up.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Talking a lot about this Arkansas loss last night to South Carolina, and to help us talk a little more about it, let's welcome in Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Good morning, Tom. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Thanks for that hot chocolate intro, man. I appreciate that.
That's what we do, man. That's what we do for you. Well, let's jump into what happened last night, Tom. It was just an ugly game all around. Arkansas did not play well. Lots of fouls, lots of bad decisions, lots of ill-advised three-pointers. Just was not Arkansas's best game. And when you saw what transpired last night, what was some of the stuff that stood out to you of why Arkansas lost this game?
Well, a bunch of things. First of all, that South Carolina reflected their coach. They were tough. They were gritty. Just hard nosed and played good defense, and they came in here and earned the win. If Arkansas had made a last second three pointer they would have smashed away, you know, a pretty much deserving loss. And I took from Eric Musselman's post-game comments at the very end, he was pretty short with his fuse, but he says, we keep taking these three-pointers. They made 26.9%, and that's not a good three-point shooting percentage. And when you take as many as they did, which was 26, then and you're not efficient with it, then it looks kind of sloppy, and it did. And so for a game in which they hold their own on the board for the first time in conference play, they tie them 36-36, to shoot threes as poorly as they did, it's like who their identity is right now, and Musselman does not like it. He really liked that 6 of 9 against TCU, where when Isaiah Joe was out, they knew they had to drive to the hole, and Desi Seals was much more of a factor. I think South Carolina's length bothered them on the inside early in the game, and that set the tone. And even though Isaiah Joe was in the game, I don't think he's 100%. I don't think Desi Seals was 100% when he came back from his ankle. And basically the offense was relying on whatever Mason Jones created. He had a great game, but Arkansas pretty much got what it deserved yesterday.
Game was tied one time. Arkansas never held the lead in the ball game. Let's go back to those first 5 minutes, because it took all the way inside the first media timeout, and it was 15-20 to go in the first half before Arkansas got on the board. Specifically, yeah. What were you seeing? Because you can point to that period of the game, Tom, and that cost Arkansas as much as anything in a two-point loss last night. The fact that you know, more or less wasted offensively the first 5 minutes of the game before you got the ball in the hole.
They absolutely did, just tentative. And Eric Musselman talked about how starting the two bigs, he did not think paid off for him, like lack of energy. They had three turnovers in that span. I think Mason Jones stepped out of bounds on one, and just a couple of passes went astray. And they went inside a couple of times, but I want to say Jimmy Witt got a shot blocked, and you know, they missed from down low. So that's what I'm saying about setting the tone. I mean, they tried to go inside, and it wasn't happening for them. And when they didn't score like that, they were turning the ball over. And it was 22-12 early on, and so the wake-up call was there, and the crowd tried to wheel them back in the game, and they made that run and got it tied. But South Carolina was just grittier. I'm concerned about Arkansas and their depth. Now, Musselman has talked about how he thinks, you know, you can get away with playing a short bench because all the timeouts and all, but I think between the minor injuries and the lack of depth, it hurt them last night. South Carolina played 11 guys. A couple of them didn't give them great value. In fact, a couple of their starters, Bryant and Cuisenard, did not have good games, but because they went so deep, they found a couple of guys. Trey Hannibal, that guard, number 12, dude was averaging 3 points a game, comes in and has a great game, drives to the hole hard, scores several times in transition, mm-hmm. creates fouls, and did a good job on Mason Jones at the end, denying him the ball on that play with 7 seconds.
Yeah, he scored 11 points and played 16 minutes, talking about Trey Hannibal. So that's very efficient play.
Oh, it certainly is. And I think Arkansas has got to look in the mirror and determine we've got to hang our hat on, you know, it's defense, but they've got to hang their hat offensively on doing, I think, driving to the hole more, and then when you're effective doing that and drawing fouls, then you can kick out for more open threes. And they need to, I think they need to be a lot more judicious about their three-point shooting. And clearly was frustrated, Eric Musselman was last night.
Three-point and free-throw shooting. I mean, because 65% ain't going to cut it. You can't win games at the end. Make missing free throws as frequently as Arkansas has done as of late.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, it's been several games in a row now. Outside of Mason Jones, superb 15 of 16. I had this up a minute ago. 11 of 24 by the rest of the crew. Bailey and Jalen Harris both 1 for 4. Jalen Harris does not need to be making 1 of 4 free throws. So it was costly. You can point to a lot of different things. Free throws and the 3-point shooting were certainly played big roles in it.
Tom, I want to ask you about that technical that was called last night, too, because it was kind of confusing when it was called. It was on the Arkansas's bench, but a lot of people didn't know it was on Musselman or whatnot. But as soon as the game had ended and he was in his press conference and he was asked by Bob, I believe it was the very first question, he says, Hayes Myers. That was who got the technical. What did you make of that whole situation and Eric Musselman's reaction to the technical?
Well, yeah, he wasn't happy. Matt Jones sent me a clip of the play, and on it, a couple of guys on the bench kind of stand up. You know, they're not really supposed to, but I think they get away with that some. And he just kind of gave a strong kind of like a fist punch, a frustration fist punch. I don't think he said anything, and that's what got him teed up. And, I mean, I guess it can happen, but I think those officials were a little bit sensitive, like Joe Lindsay was to Jamie Dixon calling out Carey the other night. They were just sensitive to it. And, man, they got really whistle-happy. Anthony Jordan called a ton of fouls. And, look, Arkansas probably ended up getting more fouls on the whole than South Carolina did. They shot more free throws. But there was a couple of just totally mystifying ones. Reggie Chaney on the floor didn't do anything, didn't roll over, didn't stick his leg up, got called for a foul after he missed a shot. And then Jalen Harris got called for a rebounding foul in which the dude just mistimed his jump, and he got called for a foul. So those were mystifying, but I think South Carolina ended up getting worse calls, actually.
Yeah, it was a pretty brutal game to watch, no doubt about it. Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, appreciate it as always, Tom. Have a great weekend, man. We'll catch up with you next week,
all right?
Have a good one, man. Always appreciate Tom coming on. So there you go, Tommy.
Yeah, mystifying.
Talk about,
you know. Well, we talked earlier about that. I wasn't going to interrupt Tom there, but we talked about the one with Chaney on the floor.
Yeah. No, we did. We handled it. Yeah. We handled it. We talked about it. So we're going to have Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette joining us because, listen, it's a Thursday, which means it's Recruiting Thursday here on the Morning Rush. We'll get with him on some of the stuff going on not only in football but also in basketball, some big visits, and how it's just around the corner, signing day. It's amazing. It's just right around the corner heading into next week. So we'll talk about that and a lot more with Richard in the third hour of the Morning Rush coming up next.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
RD, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Well, it's good to have you on, Richard, as always, especially with next week. My goodness, it seems like signing day used to be such a bigger deal than what it is nowadays, but it is still just around the corner where Arkansas will finish up their 2020 class on the football side of things. So just out of curiosity, Richard, in the final stretch here, where's Arkansas's focus? Where are they looking at? What are they trying to accomplish? What's all going on with Arkansas and these coaches in the final stretch?
Well, they're making in-home visits, visiting high schools, and trying to close out the 2020 class. And you know, it's obviously when you come in late like they have, and we talked about it, it's an uphill battle, and they're doing the best they can. And trying to close out on a few guys, and it's just a challenge. I was just about ready to sneeze. That's why I was kind of hesitating there. But anyway, obviously they're still working on some offensive linemen. They're still working on some offensive guys, receivers, Savion Williams, who was currently a commitment to Arkansas under Chad Morris. They're still working on him. Coach Briles and Coach Stepp are supposed to visit him on Friday and right before his Texas visit. So, you're just trying to hold on and try to convince the remaining guys to jump on board and close out this class. Obviously, right now they have 16 kids currently committed and that are public. And then, you hope to finish as strong as you possibly can.
All right, the 16 you mentioned there, then go to 25. What do you think they will? We've seen classes go short, and then they'll make it up down the road. What number do you think they end up at by next week?
Well, that is It's an educated guess. I mean, obviously, you know, I think they would sign 25 if they were all 25 good quality prospects. But I'm not so sure that they'll be able to get there. Could be wrong. But I think that they could finish around 22, 23 and maybe just decide to hold over a few for maybe a grad transfer or so. But if they could sign now, I mean, say they just knock it out of the park and were able to get to 25 with high school guys, I think that that's, you know, it's a possibility. But I think it's going to be kind of hard.
Richard, tell me a little bit about the newest commit that Arkansas had for the 2020 class. It happened actually last week, but it was Ebony Jackson, who's a running back out of Georgia. I look at him, and for most cases, it looks like he's a three-star, but I'm showing that he had offers to Tennessee, to Ole Miss, even Alabama, Maryland, had a few places there, but he chooses Arkansas. I mean, when what kind of player is he exactly? Is he a guy that was looked at a lot earlier, and then some teams backed off of him? I mean, anytime a player has a lot of SEC offers like that, it usually means that he's a really solid player. So what can you tell us about him?
Well, he tore his ACL in the first game of the year, his senior year, so that scared off some schools. Obviously, he was committed to Maryland before he flipped to Arkansas. And you look at his film, and you just go, wow. And you go, wow, because he's got very good size. He's about 6'6", about 210, maybe 215 pounds. He ran a 10.57 in the 100 and a 21.41 in the 200. So that shows up on his video. You really do. I mean, I tell you what, if he comes back, you know, good as new, which, you know, ACL tears aren't anything like they used to be 20, 30 years ago. He could be a special back. There's no doubt. I promise you, Arkansas is elated to have him. And I think he has a chance to be one of those guys that you look back on and say, man, this guy is one of the better SEC type backs in the conference. He's got that potential. That does the injury hamper him, or does the knee, you know, kind of give him problems? That's your question.
First of all, I didn't know they made kickers five stars. I didn't know they rated a kicker that high. But tell us more about Vito Calvaruso, which sounds like some kind of character on The Sopranos or something. And he's not from New Jersey. He's from Jeff City, Missouri. Preferred walk-on coming to Arkansas. I think fans are excited that you got a five-star kicker on the list.
Yeah, well, he's got an extremely strong leg, excuse me. His kickoffs are just off the charts. I mean, you look at his highlight film, and some of them were going way beyond the back of the end zone, out of the end zone. And then five-star, Cole's kicking rating as a five-star. I know a lot of people were asking about that on Twitter. Cole's five-star, according to them, is a Division I prospect. A four-star is a Division II prospect. So their ratings are probably, you know, far, their classification of a, you know, a five-star versus what recruiting services, you know, classify their five-stars is a little different. But obviously he's definitely one of the better ones, according to Coles, and I think he's rated number 20 overall as far as the kicker. But so again, it's not like a five star according to ESPN or somebody like that. But he is definitely a Division I guy according to Coles.
You know, Richard, I'm always fascinated by kickers and coming out of high school, because it's not one that where you mentioned, you know, you have a different service that is able to rank kickers, but it seems like so many times in college football, just in general, you'll see big-time programs not have great kickers, even if they were highly recruited at high school. But then you'll have, like, smaller programs, FCF programs, whatever, that seems like they have automatic kickers. And it's not like the rules change or the yardage changes or anything like that. It seems like kicker is almost like one of the most difficult positions to recruit for and really be able to find out, is this guy going to be able to translate to the college level? Because even at Arkansas, we saw guys that were awesome in high school not be able to translate once they got to college. How difficult is it to really rate and to be able to figure out what a good kicker is in high school?
Well, John L. Smith wasn't that high on Zach Hawker, and they lost a kicker from, I think, the Shreveport area at the last second to Texas. So they signed Zach Hawker, and obviously he turned out pretty good. I don't think that kicker that went to Texas ever panned out, and he was rated higher. I think a lot of with kickers, it's all a lot of it's mental. I mean, it's easy to kick in front of a thousand or two fans, and then when you get into, 70, 80, 90, 100,000 seat stadium, and you're having a kick in front of a roaring crowd, I think it's a little bit more difficult. And it all depends on who handles that the best, and then it's just more or less a guess of, who's going to do that.
This news is a few days old, but I want to get your thoughts on it. It's Robert Scott from Conway, who I guess had been committed to Ole Miss, the coaching change, decommitted, took a visit, now going to Florida State. What's the background there on this? And, an in-state recruit going to go down to Florida State now and had a connection, I guess, with when that staff was at Memphis.
Yeah, well, he had always said when he committed to Ole Miss back during the summer that he was wanting to go out of state. And his mom was kind of encouraging him to do that. It wasn't because they didn't like the University of Arkansas. She was kind of wanting him to kind of, you hear some parents say, broaden your horizons. You know, there's more than just Conway, Arkansas, or Fayetteville, Arkansas, or whatever. And I think that played a huge role into his decision to go out of state. And it wasn't a surprise that he ended up going to Florida State because he had a previous relationship with Norvell and another guy on their, I think the tight ends coach at Florida State had a previous relationship with those guys. And he just wanted to, see different things, experience different things. And I tell you what, anybody that wants to attack Robert Scott, they don't know him. He is one of the most delightful young men you'll ever talk to in your life. I mean, he won me over so easily. But, Coach Pittman and them did the best that they could try to convince him, hey, staying in state is a better option. But I think he had his mindset from day one to go out of state.
All right, Richard, so let me ask you, as far as these visits have been going, we really don't get an idea of going inside of what Sam Pittman and the staff does with their visits. We kind of had an idea of what Chad Morris would do and then even Brett Bielema. But when it comes to getting these guys on campus and showing them around, what has really been some of the things that you've heard from some of these on-campus visits that they've done? Anything unique, anything interesting? Are they just trying to sell them on a particular thing? What's those visits been like for these players?
Most visits are pretty much the same. They really are. Now, it's just the people that you're dealing with and the coaches and their philosophy of coaching, how they handle academics, how they handle kids once they get on campus. And it's all about what kind of relationship do you have? Do you have that trust factor with that parent? Do you have that trust factor with the kid? You pretty much the visits are pretty much all the same. You meet with academic people. You meet with nutrition people. You tour the campus. You meet with the strength and conditioning people. But it really not much difference as far as what they're doing. It's just how they're trying to sell kids and just trying to sell themselves. It's all about the people. I've always said it's not about the buildings. It's about the people inside the buildings. It's all about relationships and building those relationships. And Coach Pittman and the staff are obviously in a lot of ways are trying to play major league catch up with some of these kids, and they're closing on some of them, but quite a few of them, it makes it much more difficult.
Yeah, because one of the things that I've always found fascinating with visits is because you always get everyone's best day. Like anytime you go and visit some sort of big major school, especially when it's a bunch of kids that you really want to get after, you're always going to get the best effort from that staff. You're always going to get all the best from them. And it's just a matter of how do you particularly stand out. But I guess what you mentioned, Richard, is just the relationships that Sam Pittman and the staff is trying to build with this team, because that's what Sam Pittman's been so good at when it comes to recruiting. And I think, honestly, when he was hired and he saw all the former players come out, there's a reason for that. And it wasn't because he was just a football coach. It's because they had a true bond and a true relationship with Sam Pittman. Do you feel like sometimes that can be a little undervalued in college football when it comes to a lot of these kids committing to particular schools? I'm not saying all coaches are like that, but I feel like it probably goes a long way with them, at least something that they always appreciate later in life when they knew that they had a relationship with their coach, like a lot of them do with Pittman.
No, that's the key. That is the key. The key to recruiting is building that trust, building that relationship with not only the kid, but the parents and maybe a grandparent. You have to build that relationship enough, and like Coach Pittman said, you make it difficult for them to say no. And like I said, going with them getting, you know, in Fayetteville in December and basically having to start over with a lot of these kids and not really having a prior relationship with a lot of them, it's very tough overcoming a 1-2 year, maybe a 3 year relationship with another staff that you're just trying to build a relationship in a month or 2 months. It's almost impossible. So again, I think Coach Pittman's kind of hit on it, that his expectations for this class are not as high as you know, you would hope, but you know that the 2021 class and the 22 class, those are the classes that you're really focused on going forward. You do the best you can with this class.
And one thing I wanted to ask you about was McTelvin Ageem. Former Razorback, was at the East-West Shrine game, was at the Senior Bowl. Looked like he had two good weeks in front of scouts, and maybe has elevated his stock based on just some of the reports out of Mobile and those two games about how he handled himself in those 2 weeks.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it looks like he made him some cash, and it's all about. It's kind of like also in high school, when you're recruiting a kid in high school, you look at him on film, and you evaluate him, you evaluate him a certain way. Then you see him in person, and then you're able to see him really move, in a live atmosphere. Sometimes that changes your attitude towards a kid. It could be good, could be bad, and that, I'm sure that there were some kids that at the All-Star games that didn't do so well and probably went down on some teams' boards. Obviously, McTelvin sounds like he went up, so he did what he needed to do and impressed some of the teams.
All right, Richard, real quick before I let you get out of here, man. I just saw this come across on social media about a Clemson defensive tackle grad transfer. Xavier Kelly is reportedly going to be making an official visit to Arkansas. Do you know anything about him, that situation? Because from what it looks like, he was a pretty highly regarded player coming out of high school.
He's been slated to visit for quite some time. I didn't know it was going to be out, but he's supposed to be coming in this weekend. He was recruited by the by Arkansas when he was in high school. I actually talked to him in the when he was in high school in Kansas. So he's slated to visit.
Okay, all right. Sorry to put you on the spot there. Just wanted to
ask you about it. It's all good.
Ask you about it on that. So Richard Davenport,
he can handle it. He can roll the flow, man.
Oh, trust me, anybody that deals with recruiting has to be able to roll with the flow. Or no sleep, because that is a job for the strength of a heart right there for Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Really appreciate it as always, Richard, man. Have a great weekend. I know it's going to be a busy one for you next week. We'll catch up with you, all right?
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, appreciate it. Richard Davenport of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Folks, I got to tell you, though, when you're going to Fayetteville or if you're in Fayetteville and you're looking for somewhere to eat, we all got to eat. There's no better place to do it than Sassy's with their two locations in Fayetteville off of College and off of Weddington. I know a few of you who went to the basketball game last night, you were actually sending me tweets about the fact that you went to Sassy's. Some of you got the John Neighbor special, even though apparently, Tommy, it's still not – when people say it, apparently it still is not getting through to the waitresses of what – that is. And I mean, I don't know. My hands are tied. I'm trying to make it work. But either way, people still getting the barbecue nachos. Another guy sent me a picture of it. I'm telling you, they're phenomenal. So I know a lot of you enjoy it. If you haven't ever been to Sassy's, you have to try it out, folks. They have great options. Barbecue, burgers, award-winning smoked wings. They have great appetizers for you to try. They got a full bar. They got so many TVs that you can watch the games there. They got it all. So if you're needing a place to have lunch and or dinner, there's only one place to do it when you're in Fayetteville, and that's at Sassy's with their two locations off of College and off of Weddington. You know, Tommy, it's funny when talking with Richard just about signing day coming up. It's crazy. It's just not as big of a deal as it used to be, which I understand why. I get it. The early signing period and all that, I understand. But, man, it just seems like just 5-10 years ago that when you had signing day, my, oh, my, it was just it was an insane week leading up to that point where nobody got sleep.
We'd do live shows on location at places. We'd do, it was a bigger deal here on the radio. And maybe December becomes that. The problem is that's not the final deal for your class. That's the issue with, making December the end-all be-all, because it's not the end-all be-all. It's an early signing period. That's one reason I'd like the early signing period to be moved up to benefit the student-athlete, not protect the schools as much, but I don't think that's going to move anywhere. I'd love to see the early signing period be end of July, first part of August, and let kids sign before their high school season. But with the powers that be, that doesn't seem to be gaining much traction. And then make February the big day. Hopefully someday we'll get to that. I think this December has a lot of peril with it, particularly with a program like Arkansas the last, two of the last 4 years or whatever it is, 3 years, you've had transition within your coaching staff. It just kills you. And I'm telling you, as more schools go through coaching changes, they'll have more of that opinion about early signing day being in December.
Yeah, I think they can make a lot of adjustments to make it better, because it just seems like, I don't know, it just doesn't seem right the way it is now, if that makes sense. It just doesn't have the right feel to it. It feels like there's still a lot of disconnects from schools and with players, and it's not benefiting the right people at the right times. I don't know. I mean, hopefully they get that fixed, and hopefully they get that changed. But, I used to enjoy signing day, not as a Razorback fan because it was never fun, but mainly just to enjoy the shenanigans that happened on signing day. Those were always fun, too.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.